Hey, what's going on? This is Jeremy Thone, Marketing Director of 3PL Systems and host of 3PL Live. I'm excited to share an interview with the Director of Logistics at Continental Logistics, Alfredo Fumacas. Alfredo has got a really interesting story. He's been podcasting about a soccer team in Portugal for like the last 14 years. And he talks about these experiences, about being uncomfortable with his words, his his ahs, and how he got over that, and how he kind of just almost by the end of it convinced me it's just all about like the message. It's not really about how you got there. So I hope you enjoy this episode as I pick Alfredo's brain about the art of podcasting. Hey, Alfredo, thanks for coming on to 3PL Live. I'm excited to speak with you about just the logistics industry and also your podcast and your podcast experience. So for those out there in the audience that don't know you, would you mind introducing yourself?
Yeah, no, thank you for having me. My name is Alfredo Fumacas. I am the Director of Logistics for Continental Logistics. We're a Port Jersey logistics company. About me, I've been with Continental for 11 years. I'm also a podcaster on the side. I've had a podcast now for 14 years, running podcast about a football team or a soccer team in Europe, more specifically in Portugal. That's pretty much it. I'm 51 years old. I don't know if people are going to get offended by me telling them they're my age, but yeah, I'm young at heart, and I feel that perhaps in the best moment of my life in terms of maturity, in terms of experience, in terms of being wise.
Totally. How did you get so? I want to get into the podcasting thing after this question, but how did you get into the logistics industry, just out of curiosity? Because it seems like that is a very niche industry that I am a part of as well, and I'm just always curious.
Yeah, so I think that I was always fascinated by logistics and by being faced with challenges and coming up with solutions. And then when you add a customer aspect to the whole equation, where you're providing a solution to a customer and you find reward in that, I think that I was hooked. Once upon a time, we're here in a New York, New Jersey metro area, and we had a delivery in Connecticut. So our truck had to go over the George Washington Bridge. We had an appointment at 7 a.m., and there was a fire at the George Washington Bridge that halted all the traffic. There was a problem. I had to communicate with the customer, and, I told them. And at the end of the day, the customer said, "Why did you decide to be in logistics? It just seems like such a stressful job." But I think that us, that we are in logistics, we kind of thrive on those challenges. We thrive on being faced with complex problems and being able to think outside the box and really provide a solution for the customer.
So let's talk a little bit about podcasting too, and about like, how has it helped you in your career as far as like public speaking and things of that nature? Because I feel like podcasting is a powerful tool for like networking and just finding your voice and all sorts of things. But I want to unpack a bunch of those things. So like, how has it helped you out in your career?
Yeah, no, it's helped me out a great deal, because when I initially started, I was writing a blog, and it was right at the time that podcasts were bursting on the scene. So this goes back to 2011. So podcasts was still fairly new in the market. And I figured, I don't really have the time to write. Maybe I'll just record myself. And as it turns out, those first couple episodes, it would take me 3 hours to produce a 45-minute content podcast, because I was very subconscious about my and my pauses, just like I have now. Sure. But I think the moment that I kind of started accepting that, look, this is who I am, and regardless of how I speak and whether I'm grammatically correct and how people perceive the way I use language, at the end of the day, it's about the message, right? So once I accepted that my message is what's important, because at the end of the day, the way you speak is just a vehicle for how you deliver your message. So whether you arrive in a Bentley or whether you arrive in a Nissan Sentra, as long as the message is there, nobody's really going to care whether you use all these
words,
all these complex words that you're adorning your sentences with. What's most important is the message. And once I got through that, my hesitation, my insecurities, and I understood that my message is what mattered, I started growing in confidence. And with that confidence is just, this is who I am. And if people keep coming back to me and listening to the podcast, I'm basically doing it. I'm being natural. I'm being myself. And it really helped me because now that I'm taking away from being in front of a mic and for an audience that's live sometimes, and sometimes it's on a replay. Now it allowed me to step out in a public setting and accept that this is who I am. And if I hold this position, and if there's people that take the time to listen to me, both on a professional setting as well on a podcast setting, I think that once I got through that fear, I was fine, because I had to come to grips and accept who I am. And once that pressure was lifted off of always being a perfectionist and always wanted to be at the really tip top of my game, when the biggest thing was the message. So if people tune in for the message, it's very easy for you to now be confident, as long as you're able to put across that message and people understand what your message is.
I love that, because I feel like it's kind of like reframing the focus on, instead of like perfectionism, on a more of a thing about the message, and then like learning to like iterate. I completely feel you though. I feel like the first time I ever released an episode, I was just so self-conscious, and like I just wanted everything to be perfect. I wanted the ums and ahs to go away. Yeah. It was just like we're always so hard on ourselves, I feel like. And I don't know. I think that at what point did you realize that? How did you come up with like that epiphany? Was it through the going through the motions and then hearing the feedback?
Yeah, it was
causing it.
Yeah, it was hearing the feedback, but also there's a lot of people that get into podcasting for not the right reasons. I got into it because I was passionate about the subject matter. So for me, it was very easy, right? Because I never had the pressure of needing to grow an audience or needing to pick up sponsors or needing support from this faction or that faction. To me, I was always passionate about the subject matter. And for me, that's what was important. And I think that once you understand that, a lot of that pressure is also lifted off of you, where you're passionate, you do your research, you know your subject matter, and as a result, you grow confident in the way you're delivering. Then you develop certain methods of whether you're creating an outline for the show, you're researching, you're making sure that you're informed, because it's a lot easier to lose your audience when you come across like a fraud, that you're not a subject matter expert, than it is for somebody that has ahs and hums and pauses and not grammatically correct, but is still going to be able to deliver the message. And that's what I'm saying. Language is just a vehicle to deliver your message. And as long as you could deliver that message, it doesn't matter what vehicle you use.
What about finding your voice, like your authentic voice? I think that that's also powerful. Your voice is like it's an instrument that's very powerful. And that, like, I think Duner had like something, actually a TED talk about this, about like the power of podcasting and using your voice and like just asking for things that you want and actually just like just voicing our opinions and things and like actually having an opinion. How have you like learned to like find your voice, I guess, through this experience?
Yeah, I think that the biggest thing is understanding who your audience is, and also understanding the medium that you're using, right? Because podcast, you listen to it in the car, right? There's no visual stimulation. It's all audio. So in order for you to stimulate the listener, you kind of have to have, you can't have a monotone. You have to have these phases where you're showing that you're passionate, whether you're showing that you're upset, whether you're showing you're frustrated. Your voice has to go along with the emotions that you're trying to portray, or the subject that you're trying to show your audience.
At some point too, like, how long do you think it took you to actually get over your fears, I guess, like as far as like when you were starting out? You've been at it for 14 years now, so I'm sure that you've at some point, like probably like a couple years after, became a pro at it. But during that time, like how did you deal with some of the stress at that time, like when you were kind of more vulnerable?
Yeah, I think that as your audience grows organically, you get confident in what you're doing, and you just reinforce what you're doing, and you find your voice through that. There's feedback from your audience, which validates what you're doing and the hard work you're putting in. And I think that just serves as fuel for you to continue doing what you're doing and to really perfect what your voice is and what your message is.
I almost feel like going live is a little bit harder. Well, in my eyes, it is harder than like doing like a recording like that's like just recorded and then played back after. What's your thoughts on going live and then also like just like getting in front of a crowd as well? Because I know that you mentioned it helped you with public speaking, but even me as a podcaster with like over like 100 episodes now, I still get terrified public speaking. So I don't know if like that's something that you just get, you need more laps in, and you need to like go up there more and just kind of get over your fears. But it's just one of those things where you don't get as many as at bats, I guess, as you will to go practice. So I don't know, thoughts on that?
Yeah, and when I initially started doing a podcast, it was recorded in segments and then it was edited together. But at some point, I decided to just go live. So it was a live stream. I had a couple of my buddies join me and we would just discuss and have some banter back and forth. And they really helped getting over the fear of being live and not being perfect with every word that you mention. And I think that when you step out in a real world and you understand that your message is what people are there for, it becomes a lot easier to get over that fear. Because if you're always hesitant and you have the fear that people are going to be judging you based on whether you grammatically incorrect or you said a word that didn't really fit, I think the biggest thing is to have that message and be composed in that message and be confident in the message that you're there to deliver and not so much of what people are going to think of you when you pause, when you do the uhs and the hums. Once you get over that people are going to judge you for the way you're delivering the message, I think it just opens up a whole new set of doors for you that then you could be confident in what you do.
Yeah, sometimes I think what happens is like in live environment, like for example, I've gone on a few like live shows where I've been the one that's actually being interviewed. I find it being harder to be interviewed for some reason because I feel like I don't really have control over the questions necessarily. I don't know what's coming next at me. And I think that part of it gives me a little bit of pause and a little bit of anxiety. And I think the thing that really messes with my head sometimes is the metacognition. It's like the thoughts, it's like I'm almost thinking in the situation about what I'm saying instead of being focused about being in the moment. And I know it's like a thing that I personally need to work on myself, but like it's like this like metacognition thing that kind of screws me up instead of being like in the moment. Have you ever felt that before? Like when you just start analyzing what you're saying as you're saying it?
Yeah, of course. And I think that you will tend to stumble if you start thinking too much about what you're saying. It will ruin your flow. I think what's important is knowing who's interviewing you, what are they trying to get out of you, and then kind of compose your thoughts around that and be prepared for any questions that are thrown at you. I think that's the most important thing, is really understanding who's interviewing you and what's it about. So like that you could prepare and keep a couple of mental notes in the back of your head that you could always pull out and that you could always go to as a bit of a lifesaver.
And then how do you go prepare? Do you like just, I've heard some people too, like with like, just, this is not to do with like podcasting or whatever, but I've heard people, like a lot of people have like lost their jobs lately. And then when they're going out there to like prepare for an interview, someone was telling me earlier that sometimes they would say like the answers out loud when they're being interviewed, for example. Is that something that you've done in the past? I guess like if you were in like a stressful situation?
Yeah, it could be that. It could just be really, so for example, I'm not in a job market by any means, but if you're reading a job description, you got to be able to read between the lines of a job description. So you're not asking the cliched questions or the canned questions from your interviewer. You're actually being curious and you're asking questions about things that weren't directly mentioned, but are directly tied into the job description. So I think that the biggest thing is to really do a bit of homework when it comes to a situation that you're going to be into, that you're going to be interviewed. And look, sometimes the person that's interviewing you is kind enough to share the questions, which makes your job a lot easier. But I think it has to do with doing some mental preparation so you're ready to be able to field any question that's thrown at you.
The interesting thing too is that we've talked a little bit about like, you know, the ums and the ahs and like wanting to be perfect. But in general, I feel like the people that you're really attracted, or the people that I'm attracted to, are usually flawed. You know, they're the ones that are kind of just telling you like, hey, like crazy story. Like, there's this one guy, Zach, that I follow, like, on LinkedIn, for example, and he's like in a band, and he's like neurodivergent, autistic, Asperger's. And yeah, it was interesting because he talked about how he was like homeless at one point, but then he's like turned his life around. Now he's like a musician. He has like a pretty successful like website company. And like, I would never like want to admit to anyone that I was ever at that like low point in my life. And I think that everyone's different, but I feel like those people that are able to like get to this like place of vulnerability, or like even like you came to our event when Trey was talking, Trey Griggs was talking about just like his father's relationship and like how like, you know, he wanted to impress his dad or whatever. And like his dad, like he always, everything was all about like his dad's opinion of him or whatever. It's just this like weird self-awareness thing with Trey, but then with also this like vulnerability thing. I think that vulnerability is actually like a superpower to some sort of degree, but I definitely am more reserved, I guess, or more conservative in my approach. But I also think it's really interesting when people are able to share things like that, because it makes you feel like more connected and like more human. Yeah. For some reason, when you hear that you're not the only one that's gone through, you know, shit.
Yeah, no, I have an easier time relating to somebody that's going to be just like me, a normal person, than I would have to somebody that's doing a TED talk, for example, right? And even think about in a social setting, your group of friends, they may have all these characteristics, and some guy is like this, and another guy, you know, is a little quirky. But at the end of the day, what do you really like about them? What attracts you to them? It's their personality. It's the way you interact with them. It's the relationship that you've developed over years. So I think at the end of the day, you kind of have to be vulnerable, because that's how people are going to relate to you. That's how you're going to know that you're not in a world alone, that people are just as flawed as you. And when you accept that and you're able to build up on that, then you're in a much better position than if you were just extremely reserved and you have a hard time showing some vulnerability. And when we talk about vulnerability, I'm not saying going way, way deep into a darker time in your life and expose that. But there's certain things that you could expose. We're not giving too much if you're not okay in revealing too much, that will still allow people to connect with you and relate to you.
It's totally fair. I always love that one quote too by Brene Brown. If you're not in the arena getting your ass kicked on occasion, I'm not interested and open to your feedback. Right. I also think that's important too. Like, I think that feedback is important to like listen to like what your audience is saying, or like what people around you or your friend groups are saying. But I also feel like I try to like stay in the middle. I don't know what your thoughts are on it. Like, I try to take, if someone pays me a compliment, I'm very gracious and grateful for it. But then at the same time, like, I don't want to like ride too high. And then if someone says something negative, that way I'm not like going to be like, you know, I'm not going to go crawl in a hole and die if like someone says something negative about me. So I try to like manage myself sort of like in the middle. And I realized too that like feedback is like very important, like as far as like whatever feedback you have, it's going to make you grow as an individual, but sometimes it hurts. So I don't know what your thoughts are on that.
Yeah, no, feedback is always extremely important, because it helps you, whether it's negative or positive, it's going to help you grow. It should never put you back in a hole or revert you back to where you were 3 years ago, now that you've built up this experience and grown in confidence. And look, at the end of the day, opinions are like assholes. Everyone has one, right? So you take it with a grain of salt. There's opinions that you're going to value more. There's other ones that you're not going to value so much. But as a decent human being, you have to be able to accept those opinions, right? Because you would want people to also take you seriously and accept your opinions, regardless of whether they agree with them or not. To have an opinion and to be able to share that, I think it's key for your personal growth, and to also be able to accept the criticism, whether it's positive or negative.
Yeah, that's fair. And I do feel like too, like the freight industry specifically, they're definitely, it's an amazing industry, but I do feel like I remember when Convoy went over, a lot of people were saying like endless capacity now, you know, and just kind of making fun of everyone. I just feel like in general, it's definitely not like the easiest industry. It's definitely a tough industry, which is, I don't know if it's good or bad, but I'm just saying it's, people are not exactly super forgiving, but there's a lot of nice people in the industry as well. Yeah. What were your thoughts on that? Do you think that like the industry in general, though, it's pretty tough as far as like the criticism?
Yeah, I think the industry by design is ultra competitive, and with that competition comes a lot of resentment, comes a lot of envy. So you kind of have to be prepared to be able to deal with those emotions. Obviously, there's guys that are going to be more vocal about somebody's demise. Other guys might be a little bit more private in terms of what they think. All right. But always know that whatever your opinion is, somebody's listening. And whether they decide to take it in a positive way or a negative way, they're always going to be listening for that opinion. So sometimes it's good to kind of temper what your opinion is, and to, as you mentioned, kind of stay midway, not too much to one side or not too much to the other side, because then all of a sudden you become somebody that people are labeling. And the worst thing that somebody could do to you is label you, when oftentimes that label doesn't even fit.
Yeah, that's totally fair. It's the worst, being pigeonholed and labeled into one sort of thing, like a one-trick pony type situation, when every human being is so dynamic. What's your thoughts too, like on like LinkedIn? Like, it seems like these like LinkedIn Lives, for example, Mike and Cameron are going to do a show now called 3PL Live Sessions, which I'm stoked on. I've been kind of pushing for them to do something like that as well. It seems like this medium of like going live and also video content seems to be more of like a, I know it's been around for, and you're way ahead of the game, obviously, with 14 years, but it seems like now like the industry, also the freight industry, is getting more into video and more in also just the SaaS industry in general is getting more into like video and more into audio and things of that nature. And I think it's something to do with like ChatGPT is making it really easy for like folks to go out and prompt something and write content super easy. So like showing up on video, it's a little bit harder to hide your face, essentially. And like it's more of like a human experience is potentially one reason, I think. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, and I think that on video, and there's great mediums out there right now that you could use to target your audience. But I think that when you're on video, there's a level of vulnerability that you're opening yourself to the world for. All of that, it's real, because people like to see who's speaking. I know that there's a lot of shallow people out there that will be very judgmental in terms of the way somebody talks or the way somebody looks. But I think that when you could show your face, and as you're trying to pass through your message, it's incredibly powerful that somebody could see, because oftentimes people will look at you, at your facial expressions, and they could tell whether you're being genuine or not. So I think that the video aspect of something like that, when you're targeting your audience and your audience is interested in your message, is very powerful, because now they could see exactly who's saying these words to you and what their face looks like and what facial expressions they're making as they're delivering their message.
I was playing around with some like YouTube shorts last year, and I would definitely write them and script them out and then kind of do, I definitely wasn't very good at them, to be completely honest. They were kind of a little bit more robotic than I would have liked. They weren't as conversational. I think it's easier for me to have a conversation with someone than to be in front of the camera. For some reason, it gives me like anxiety and I start getting like introverted and in my head for some reason. For people like myself, what advice do you have for people that are playing with video in 2024 and like wanting to like get more in front of a camera, but maybe aren't used to being in front of the camera as much?
Yeah, just prepare. Over prepare if you need to. Write out an outline, go through your outline, highlight points that you really want to hit. The worst thing that you could do is go on a YouTube video or a short whatever and just ad lib, because I think that people that are there for the content consider you a subject expert matter. They're going to find you out right away if you're just ad-libbing, or if you've done your homework and you're presenting a well-thought-out idea and researched the topic that you're talking about. I think that's the most important thing is being prepared.
Yeah, there's certain people too, like even as writers, I've noticed on LinkedIn that have this like conviction when they write for some reason. They're able to like, I have a buddy that actually is like a solopreneur and he made like $200,000 at 27 years old. He's a Gen Zer, and he writes so powerfully. The way he just like the impact, like the passion, you can feel it. And I don't know, like I don't know if like that's like a personality thing, that some people are just able to have like this like gnarly conviction when they talk and when they like write, versus like other people are don't have that same, I don't know if like it's a skill set or if it's just something, I don't want to say that it's like innate, but I think that I've definitely noticed that some certain people have like more of this conviction for some reason. And I'm wondering like, what's your thoughts on like how to get that conviction?
Yeah, look, I'll compare it to something that's really easy and relatable, right? The United States has 200 something thousand million people in population. How many of those are professional athletes?
Not many.
Right? So the thing is that there's people that have the personality and to have this innate ability to project themselves, to come across clear. They have a way with words. They're wordsmiths. Not everyone is going to have that skill set, but that shouldn't prevent you from playing a sport in the park with your friends, right? Or cater to this other audience that's interested in folks that they could relate to, people that they see themselves in, that the message is simple and not adorned by all these fancy words. That's the way that I think about it. There's people that have the personality, and we've seen the personalities of people that are outgoing. They express themselves extremely well. And then there's other people that may not express themselves extremely well, but that they could deliver the message in a similar fashion.
Yeah, it's fascinating. I think that a lot of it too is like mindset. You seem to have a very solid mindset. Like how did you develop your mindset as far as like the way you think? Because I definitely sense this like you control whatever you can control. Like you almost have like a stoic mindset where like you are very confident in like what the way you view the world and the way you think about things. So did that develop over time or have you always been this way?
Yeah, no, it develops over time as you grow in confidence and you come into your own and you lose the fear of being judged or for people passing judgment on you or typecasting you in such a way. I think that once you get away from that and you're confident in the message that you're trying to portray, everything else is just noise around you. And I think it's hard to get there, right? It's hard to not give a shit or what somebody thinks about you when you feel confident in what you're trying to put out there. And also the thing is that there's always going to be an audience if you're genuine and passionate about your subject matter. And when you're confident about your message and you know that there's an audience out there that won't judge you, then you grow confident in those abilities. And then by and large, as you grow confident, you also grow your audience because now you become more confident the way you speak, your message is better, you're programmed, or your content is a lot more polished because you learned along the way because you haven't had these things tying you down, these stigmas tying you down that I don't speak proper English or my grammar's shitty. So I think that once you get away from those fears and having that hesitation that people are going to judge you, you're going to be on a path to growth and confidence.
I think it's good to also have like people that inspire you or people that you look up to, but I also feel like it could be a slippery slope when you start comparing yourself to other people, because that's when you start going, oh yeah, Shit, I'm never going to be like Luke over there. You know, I don't have that swag that Luke has, but it doesn't really matter, I guess, right? It's like more like just your own style of how you approach it.
Yeah, I mean, your style is your style. And you might idolize Luke, and then there may be five other people that can't stand Luke, that will not listen to a word that Luke has to say. So it all has to do with knowing your audience and being able to deliver content that your audience is going to find that is relatable content. And I think that once you know that audience, then you could grow from there. It's okay to strive to be one of these days, I want to put out a podcast with that level quality that Luke puts out. And it's good to strive towards being that, but it's never good to discourage yourself when you think, I'm never going to be that like Luke. So that should always be your drive. It's like, I want to be just like Luke. I want to put out the same content that Luke puts out, regardless of whether I'm eloquent with the words that I use like Luke. What I really want is to be able to put out my message in the same manner that Luke puts it out.
How is your, like, last couple of minutes here, and we'll wrap it up, but how, like, as far as like the podcast that you created for soccer, how has the audience changed over the years, or how did you find initially, did you have an idea for what you wanted the audience, and did that change over time, or like, how did you approach that, or how would you approach that again if you're doing it again?
No, I really got into it as just a hobby. The audience grew organically because people liked my message and liked my opinion. It kind of grew from there. It grew from there to the point that, you know, there's times that I'll disagree with listeners, and that's fine. They have their opinion, and they'll disagree with me. The audience grew organically because I podcasted for the love of podcasting and for the love of the subject matter, not so much to grow an audience. Because if you're growing an audience, if you're trying to grow an audience, and every week you're looking at the numbers, you're looking at the downloads, and you realize that you've kind of hit a bit of a plateau, that your audience is not growing, that's when the negativity and the negative thoughts start setting in. And I think that once those start setting in, you start thinking about, maybe this is not worth it. Maybe I shouldn't do this. You can't get detracted by those types of things, by the numbers, because if you're passionate about something, and this goes for anything that you do in life, if you're passionate about something that you do in life, you should continue doing it for the passion that you have for it, and not so much for public acceptance or social acceptance, or you're trying to impress this person. If you're passionate, do it for the passionate. If you're going to start a podcast with the intent that you want to be sponsored, that you want to have this audience out there that's millions of thousands of people, you're never going to get there. You're never going to get there. So as long as you're passionate about what you're doing and you continue doing it because you're passionate about it, you will never feel disappointed, because all you're doing is you're fueling your passion.
Yeah, no, I love podcasting for the reason of talking to people like you and like just the others in the community. To me, it's like all about like community and about learning from other folks that have had rich histories like yourself. So to me, I think that's where it's at. I totally get what you're saying though, because like in my 20s, I had this like weird thing where I wanted to be like a sponsor snowboarder, and I wanted to be a professional snowboarder for a hot minute there, which was kind of a delusion, to be completely honest. At that time though, like all I cared about was like, I wanted that so bad of like just this acknowledgement of like being sponsored and all this sort of stuff, which didn't really, it wasn't a good place to be, because then you're not really having fun. You're not coming from a place of love and a place of just like curiosity and why. Now I think the way I think is more like long-term thinking, delayed gratification. One quote actually that stuck with me by this guy, James Clear from Atomic Habits, is he says that time magnifies the margin between success and failure. It will multiply whatever you feed it. Good habits make your time your ally. Bad habits make time your enemy. And the way I look at it is kind of like, if we're putting good into the world, coming from a place of like value and serving, that you really can't go wrong. I think it's the people that are, like you said, that are like in it for a specific outcome for whatever reason. Maybe they want to be like famous or rich or whatever. They want to be Joe Rogan. And I think that that's like to your point, like a recipe for failure. But like if you're really in it just because like you're a curious person and like you really want to add value to people's lives for the things that you've said today on the show, I think that everything that all that things with your experience, it will help a lot of people. That I know that I'm not the only one out there that fears being out in the public or speaking goes, because I see a lot of people that, what is it? It's like the second biggest fear besides like dying or something like that. So I know I'm not the only one.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that at the end of the day, regardless of whether your audience is 5 or 1,000 or thousands of folks that tune in and listen to you, I think at the end of the day, if one of your ideas could resonate with somebody, that to me is a win. It's not, to me, is not increasing my audience by tenfold. Everybody likes an audience, right? But I think at the end of the day, if you're being passionate and you're putting something out there and somebody out there is listening and it triggers something in that person's mind where they feel more confident about themselves, where they feel more motivated to do something, motivated to change their life. I think that if you're able to do that, I think that ultimately that is a goal that everybody should strive for.
I love that. I think the same thing with like writing when people are like newer, like writing content on LinkedIn and they're really worried about the way that they're going to be received. I think that that's the way to look at it. Like, it's not about like how many likes or comments you get. It's more about like, did I have like impact like on like just one person? To me, I feel like that's like more valuable than just sort of getting a bunch of like vanity metrics and, yeah, and whatnot.
100%. I completely agree with you, because for me, if you're being genuine, as I mentioned, your audience will grow organically because they could see the realness in you, and they will tune in for the realness in you, not for the gimmicky show and sound effects that you may have. Sure, it could add to the content, right?
But sure.
I think at the end of the day, when you strip all of that, what is your message? And how do people, have you built a trust with the audience when they know that every time they tune into you, I know that people have plenty of options of things to do. And I'm very privileged that my listeners tune into me every week to listen to the podcast, because I know the choices that are out there. So I think that when you have this passion and people recognize that passion that you have and can relate to it and are tapping into it every single week, that's a successful podcast for me, regardless of whether it's 10 people or 15 people.
100%. I'm completely in alignment with you. That was a fascinating conversation, Alfredo. I really appreciate the time. Where do I send people for the podcast, for your LinkedIn, and then also for your work, Port Jersey Continental?
Yeah, so the podcast is about a Portuguese soccer team or football team called Benfica. You could go to benficapodcast.com. That's Benfica podcast.com if you want to check that out. It's a little bit of a niche market, I know, but you can find it there. In terms of continentallogistics.com is where you can find our company. Port Jersey Logistics is where is our parent company. And I'm sorry I didn't get to talk much about freight and logistics, but I think that it was a good conversation that we certainly had, and I appreciate you bringing me on.
Yeah, thanks so much for the time. I appreciate it. Thanks for sticking around to the end of that episode. How did we already get to January 12th? Can't believe it. Happy New Year, everyone. Anyways, hope you enjoyed that episode with Alfredo Fumacas. Definitely go check out his podcast about Portuguese soccer. Very interesting guy. I really felt connected afterwards as well, just thinking about connecting just the message, right? It's not about so much myself, my ego. It's about the message, and it's about just getting the message across. And I think that Alfredo did an excellent job of getting me into that mindset. Hope you enjoyed that episode. We always appreciate it if you share our podcast with your friends, and have a great weekend. See ya.